Watch your language, man.
I didn't say anything bad.
I've been cursing up a storm since watching this one.
I've only said 399 curse words since I watched this, so we're good.
You're covered now? You got them all out? There are so many fucks in this thing. I love it.
There are, but we'll get to all of that.
We will get to all of that.
Welcome to Beer Me a Movie. It's a podcast where we throw movies at each other every week and say, hey, bet you didn't think I was going to pick this one.
Kick the podcast.
Don't kick the podcast.
Kick the podcast. Back and forth. Every single week. And this is a special month, man.
It's a very special month. I'm a slut for this month.
You are the biggest slut for this month. Use your slut mouth and tell everybody what this magical month is.
I am on the record as saying I am a slut for musicals. And I happen to know that Dave is a little bit of a slut for musicals, too. So this month, we're talking about musicals, damn it.
We're slut-shaming ourselves. That's how it works, right?
I mean, I don't feel any shame. Do you feel shame?
Never. Never. This isn't even a guilty pleasure. This is a pleasure.
This is a straight-up pleasure. Don't have guilty pleasures. Just like what you like. Dave Grohl. Michael Scott. So here we are, the first week of musical April. I'll probably come up. I won't be able to come
Please
up with a clever
don't.
Name for
Please
this one.
Please don't.
Think. It's just going to be like musical month, and that's so lame. But it is the first week, and it was Dave's choice, so I need to know what movie you beard us?
I beard y'all South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut from 1999, directed by Trey fucking Parker.
Yeah, you did. You took it right off my list.
I took it off everyone's list, apparently.
Apparently, yeah. We had already received listener picks for this movie, and now I'm going to have to switch it up.
But it makes sense, because everybody who's listening to this, you're also probably a slut for musicals.
I mean, I hope there's a few sluts for musicals out there. Otherwise, this month is going to be tough.
And do you want to know who the ultimate slut is?
Who?
Stephen fucking Sondheim. He called this movie the best movie musical in 15 years.
That's wild.
Yeah, or it could say something about the state of musicals at that time also, but I want to elevate this one instead of doing the glass half empty thing.
Yeah, sure. Or the state of Stephen Sondheim.
When we said we were doing a musical month, this was the first thing that popped into my head.
It was very high on the list of things that popped into my head, too.
Let's just get into this thing because we're going to love it. And that's always the toughest thing to talk about.
But that is. It's always harder when we love it. We have to tear down the good and celebrate the bad.
It's the rule. The golden rule.
So let's get into it. The first category in our arbitrary yet scientifically accurate scoring system is casting. And well, this is a Trey Parker and Matt Stone movie, so that's the cast.
Hey, don't forget Mary Kay Bergman. If we still had female characters, this movie's got like a one, maybe?
It's like one woman played every woman. But it does pass the Bechdel test.
It does. They managed to do it with almost no women.
Different named characters speaking to each other, all one woman in a sound booth, but technically passes.
It's where you lick the finger, count it.
There's also some excellent cameos in this. You know, George Clooney as Dr. Doctor.
That's not a joke. My grandpa's doctor was Dr. Doctor.
Oh, is it really?
I'm not kidding. Yeah. And my grandpa kept going there saying, give me the news.
Shouldn't he have been going to Anchor Anchor for that? Or Reporter Reporter?
He couldn't because he had a bad case of loving you.
It just clicked. Holy shit. It's going to be a long musical month if I forget what music is.
Oh, jeez.
Eric Idle is also in this as Dr. Vossnacker, the doctor that got a name.
It's a 10, obviously. They're doing obviously. The South Park shtick and it works. They managed to get Saddam Hussein. That's a get.
That is a get. Saddam Hussein as himself and Satan as himself. So, big gets. They were actually played by Trey Parker and Matt Stone. That shouldn't be a surprise.
No, it should not. Yeah, 10, obviously. They didn't need to cast anyone else.
I actually really liked in the credits how they were like, most of the celebrities, they listed their names out, like Conan O'Brien and Winona Ryder did not consent to being involved in this movie, but they never said anything about Saddam Hussein.
Amazing.
10 for casting. Next up is story motivation.
this is really good.
It really is.
It's not every day that you get this parody satire that is on such a genius level, the way that this story is built out, but they're able to dumb it down at points. This big thing time. Is kind of like a Christopher Nolan movie.
A little, yeah, it's like, it's got a lot of high level intelligent topics, but we're going to make it so everybody gets it so they feel real smart at the end.
So what you're saying is that the MPAA is bad for making movies bad? Is that what you're saying? Oh, look, a dragon. Oh, it pooped. Good. It pooped a fireball out because we're in hell. That's good that we had the fart in there, because now I feel like I'm not talking Einstein anymore.
No, I get it. I get it. It's like a commentary on social issues, but also there's boobs.
The thing that's killing about what you just said there is not far removed from a lot of what I read about Trey Parker in this movie. And we'll get there. I can't believe that, but we'll get there.
Let's get right into the synopsis. Stan Mersch. Those are the first two
words
I had to.
Don't you dare. You had to. I get it, but no more.
Yeah. Okay. Stan Mersch, Kyle Brawlowski, Eric Cartman, and Kenny McCormick sneak into an R-rated Canadian movie, Asses of Fire, featuring their favorite comedy duo, Terrence and Philip.
I love this bit with the ticket guy at the movie theater. How he sees the kids clearly. And he's like, no, you're not old enough.
Yeah.
Can't do that, kids. Look how little you guys are. Look how eternally little you are.
So they hire a homeless man to buy the tickets for them.
As you do. And I love everything about South Park, the way it's written, the way it's acted. Because without skipping a beat, after the ticket guy says, like, this movie might not be appropriate for your kids, he's just like, hey, this guy says this movie might not be appropriate for you. Like, I like how they always try to keep an adult in the room.
Yeah. Even if that adult is easily swayed by $10 for a bottle of vodka.
I get it. That's all I'll say. If you want, I'll hang out at the movie theater. You kids are going to buy me vodka. Fine. Is that how it works? Have I reached that point of my life?
Honestly, all they had to do was buy a ticket for Wild Wild West, and we'll get there later.
Oh, jeez. I'm so tired of talking about that movie. Keep going.
It's never going to stop.
It's never going to stop. Can't escape.
The boys are influenced by the movie's vulgar humor and start using profanity, which alarms their parents, especially Kyle's mother, Sheila Brawlowski.
I love how excitable she is at every little thing. And it's
everything.
That's the character. That's it. That's all you need, though.
Absolutely. You need somebody to fly off the deep end in order to move the plot forward.
Don't you dare call her a MacGuffin. Don't you dare.
I mean.
Because that's Kenny. And a baked potato.
It is Kenny and a baked potato. Sheila, outraged by the film's effect on the children, starts a campaign against Canada, blaming it for corrupting America's youth.
Do you think she actually saw the movie?
No.
Or are they treating this thing like a Florida Republicans in books situation where
100%.
You know they didn't read it?
Not a political podcast, but that's exactly what's happening.
I would pay very, very good money to Nicole Kidman face her while they're watching the movie. And just get the reaction of her watching Terrence and Philip movie?
It'd be a weird meta movie.
Hey, if Shia LaBeouf could do it.
Well, Shia LaBeouf can do anything, according to Shia LaBeouf.
According to Shia LaBeouf.
Kenny attempts a dangerous stunt to imitate Terrence and Philip and dies in the process, leading to his soul being sent to hell.
It's not just any dangerous stunt. He tries to light a fart on fire.
He tries to prove Cartman that you can light a fart on fire, and he does successfully.
Has Mythbusters done this?
I don't think they have.
Man, this is like perfect for Grant. He would get off on this one.
Well, that's not what the stunt is supposed to do. You're supposed to light a fart on fire, not get off.
Well, Grant got off to everything because everything was science, and that's all he cared about. Tori, he needed the explosion in order to reach peak velocity. And speaking of velocity, Carrie Byron, she needed speed.
Are you talking about the drug?
No, not the drug. No, she needed to. She was the quick one, if I remember right. And
yeah,
also the host, because the other two got real awkward.
I feel like I might need to go back and watch more Mythbusters.
Just for the relationships? That's what everyone watches it for, right?
Gotta figure out the dynamic of the co-hosts.
There seems to be a power struggle going on whenever they bring out that dummy.
The dummy's the real host. In hell, Kenny meets Satan and his abusive partner Saddam Hussein, who are both plotting to take over the world when the entrance to hell is opened on Earth. Kenny offers Satan relationship advice.
It's very sound advice.
I imagine it is. It sounds like...
Satan reacted very positively to it. And he's a very depressing character in this. I felt bad for him.
They managed
to make you feel bad for Satan.
It helps that Satan has the only song in this movie that's not laced with profanity.
No, and it's beautiful.
It really is.
It's an actual showstopper.
It's kind of like the Somewhere Out There from Fievel Goes West. Is that the right one?
Oh, yeah. You're getting it absolutely right. I can't believe we're bringing that up again.
Or more like Part of Your World from Little Mermaid.
You're trying to throw me off the scent of what you're picking either next week or the week after, because you gave me a hint of just 97 minutes, and that was the only hint you gave me.
I did.
Did you change?
I have not changed a single thing. This is the one that I've had locked in for a while now.
It's bothering me. I have no clue what it is, and it's bothering me.
Well, we'll get there at the end of this episode, and I'm very excited.
The amount of musicals I've looked up the runtimes for on IMDb is gross this past week. It's absolutely disgusting.
That's funny.
Satan, showstopper.
The campaign against Canada escalates, and the United States declares war, arresting Terrence and Philip as war criminals. And Conan O'Brien was in on it.
Hey, he's a fucking rat.
Working with Sheila? How does Sheila make all these connections?
Gingers, buddy. That's why you don't trust them.
The underground ginger network.
They're not even underground anymore. I keep seeing more and more in the street. There's fucking daywalkers.
Too many cases of gingivitis.
God. Speaking of, dentists, they're like the gingers of the doctor world.
That's what they say. Sheila and Leanne Cartman have a V-chip implanted in Eric, which gives him an electric shock every time he curses.
They picked the perfect kid for this.
Oh, I mean, of course.
And I love watching the cards at doctors flipping over and just one just big floppy donkey dick.
Big floppy donkey dick.
They had so much fun writing this movie. So much fun.
Which is funny because there was a scene earlier in the movie where the MPAA wouldn't allow Cartman's mom in a video on the internet that wasn't even seen by the audience. They wouldn't allow it to be her and a horse. So it became a German
Scheisse?
Scheisse. Which the MPAA was fine with. They were like, oh, that's much better. But they were okay with the cue card with the horse fucker.
The MPAA is funny, man.
It is. And I love how this whole movie is basically about how funny they are while actively combating them.
If you get a chance and you want to learn more about the MPAA, if it's actually interesting to you, there's a great documentary called This Film Is Not Yet Rated. It's Kirby Dick. It's an A-plus name. But
it's a great
name. It's a great, great, great documentary that talks about the MPAA and how it makes almost no sense.
This movie had a rating of NC-17 until 2 weeks before it came out.
It makes me think, like, what did they cut to get it under? Because a lot of these movies, these types of movies, they'll put in one thing that's just way, way, way over the top. So it makes your way over the top stuff seem not nearly as bad.
By comparison, that way you can cut the wacky thing you put in there because you knew it was going to get cut and keep some of the stuff that might not have passed otherwise.
That's producing.
Sure is. And Trey Parker and Matt Stone are excellent producers.
They are excellent producers. You want to know how I know?
How?
Trey Parker's estimated net worth as of 2023? $600 million.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I don't think it does because you see all the stuff that Trey Parker does in his movies. And in all the interviews, Matt Stone's like the quiet one.
Yeah.
Matt Stone's net worth, $700 million.
What the hell's going on there?
I don't know.
Matt Stone always has way fewer credits than Trey Parker, too, because Trey Parker is always listed as the director, and then Trey and Matt are both writers and producers. But everybody knows that Matt made all his money in college.
Fucking basketball.
Yeah.
Classic. Absolute classic.
Cartman is visited by the ghost of Kenny, who warns him that they need to save Terrence and Philip to prevent the apocalypse. Because if Canadian blood is spilled on American soil, it opens a gate from hell for Satan to take over the world.
Sure, why not? Again, they put more ridiculous things in this movie, and it makes the entire premise movie not seem nuts. I love it. I love it so much.
Stan, who's trying to prove he's cooler than Wendy's new love interest, Gregory, seeks advice from the Mole, a French exchange student and resistance fighter, to help rescue Terrence and Philip.
I love the Mole.
The Mole's great. He's just such an obvious plant from Les Mis.
Yeah, that's fine. Again, it's a satire. It's a parody.
It's so well done.
It's celebrating musicals through and through.
Absolutely. If anybody's a slut for musicals, it's Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
And they managed to work in Cannibal the Musical with the Baked Potato.
Baked Potato. I've never seen Cannibal the Musical, so I don't know.
It's totally fine.
All right.
Really impressive for a first film, for what that's worth.
Okay. It's the only one we haven't talked about on the podcast now.
Really?
Of their movies.
Oh, damn. All right, maybe one day. Maybe not during musical month, weirdly, but one day.
Why not? Is it not a musical?
Oh, it's absolutely musical. It's in the name.
All right.
Really the only one, when you think about it.
The boys and the Mole infiltrate the USO show, where Terrence and Philip are scheduled to be executed, but the Mole is killed in the process, and Cartman starts experiencing interference with his V-chip.
I love when this thing starts malfunctioning, because it's like looking into the future at Elon Musk's Neuralink thing.
It's like, I know what I want it to do, but it keeps zapping me instead.
Did you see that video that came out last week, I guess it was? The guy who was playing chess on a computer with his mind, the Neuralink guy?
I didn't see it, but I saw a similar one that came out like 5 years ago, which tells me there hasn't been much progress.
Yeah, this guy makes cars and quote-unquote trucks also. That guy.
you could call it a truck, I guess.
It's in the name, but it's not like Cannibal Musical, because right. That is an actual musical, and the Cybertruck is just bullshit.
It's not even cyber.
What do you want it to do to be cyber? Like when you get in the car, instead of like welcoming you, it's just like ASL?
I just, you know, it's real and physical. It's not a cyber truck. It's a real truck.
So you want this thing to be like a light cycle from Tron?
I mean, it would be better than it being a real thing.
Anything at all would be better. They made a stainless steel car because that was always his big dream. And then it rusted because they're like, yeah, this stuff's not meant to be out in the rain. Get a garage, you fucking peasants.
It also has bulletproof windows that aren't bulletproof. So.
They're not. They threw a brick. But maybe those were the brick-proof proofs.
Right. If it's all a simulation, then it is technically a Cybertruck, I guess.
This show's getting more political, Brian. That's not great.
Oh, I know. Not a political podcast. All better.
Oh, we're better. We did it.
Yeah, we did it. Fixed it. Despite their efforts, Terrence and Philip are executed, opening the gates of hell and allowing Satan and Saddam Hussein to invade Earth.
They kind of do.
They come out of the hole and they're like, ah, we're here.
It feels weird to say that Shang-Chi did it better.
That is weird to say, but not wrong. With Hell's forces unleashed, the United States Army battles the Canadian Army and the demons, leading to a chaotic war.
That's not what you want.
It's not ideal. Demons in your battlefield.
But now we get to go arm in arm with those fucking syrup suckers. Because they're our brothers in arms now. And their arms come off. Tear the arm off, as is tradition.
As is tradition. Cartman discovers that the V-chip gives him electrical powers when he curses, which he uses against Saddam Hussein.
He's like an X-Man now.
He's more like a Dragon Ball guy. You know, one of them.
You're a big fan, then.
He goes Super Saiyan, brah, with his curse words and his Kamehamehas.
Is it Vegeta? Is that a thing?
Vegeta is one of the characters on the show, yes.
Is that the green one?
No, that's Piccolo.
No, that's an instrument.
Oh, I think I'm outing myself as actually knowing things about this now.
Whenever I think of Vegeta, I can't say the name without going, it's not vagina.
It's like ordering fajitas.
Is that the one that trips you up with vaginas?
No, never. But it does Peter Griffin. Kenny convinces Satan to stand up to Saddam, and Satan throws Saddam back into hell. Because when the gates of hell opened, Kenny came up too.
That's a bold choice from Satan. Throwing Saddam back into the hellhole, and then he's going to have to go rule hell.
That's true. But what else are you going to do with him?
Send Saddam up to heaven. Really mess some shit up. That might be like Satan's play.
I feel like it would have gotten us a sequel.
I'm very happy it didn't happen.
Doesn't Saddam eventually end up in heaven in this series? That's why they're building the ladder to heaven?
I can't remember a lot of those early episodes. I was like sneaking around because my parents were like, you can't watch it. And I'm just like, fuck
yeah.
You. And they're like, ah, God, our boy, we've lost him.
Ah, it's those damn Canadians.
Maybe that's why my dad doesn't want to talk hockey with me ever.
I was also sneaking around the house watching South Park. In fifth grade, I moved from Massachusetts to New Hampshire, and my going away card said, "Brian, we'll miss you and your Cartman impression." Fifth grade.
Do you do a Cartman impression?
I did in fifth grade.
Fair enough. All right, I know. My favorite impression of yours is your meat wad. It's so good.
I love busting out the meat wad.
Spot on.
As a reward for Kenny's advice, Satan grants him one wish. Kenny wishes for everything to return to the way it was before the war, knowing that this means he'll remain dead.
Just go back a little farther.
Yeah, right? You could have gone back like a few days, and you would have been right back to life.
It's Prison of Azkaban yourself. That's it. Gotta go back far enough.
Yeah, but Kenny also knows what's waiting for him when he makes this sacrifice play.
This is a boob play?
It's a boob play, 100%.
Man, that Kenny, he gets it.
Kenny's sacrifice leads to a restoration of peace, and the boys learn the importance of free speech and the consequences of censorship. Sheila realizes the error of her ways and acknowledges that parents should teach their children to be responsible rather than blame external influences. And Kenny removes his hood, reveals his face as he says goodbye to the boys, and is accepted into heaven as a reward for his selflessness.
I think the most wild part about this is that this movie came out only in season 2 of South Park.
Yeah, it's absolutely bonkers.
And it makes it feel like there's a whole life before it that was just so huge that you can make this movie and get away with this movie.
Apparently, they thought that this movie was going to be the last thing that happened. They thought they were going to get canceled around season 3, and that this movie was going to be their way of just ending the show. And well, the show is still on, so.
They did a real bad job at that, then. It feels weird that Kenny removes his hood here.
Yeah.
Like, in season 2, it had an impact. It was like a thing of like, wow, Kenny takes off his hood. I remember kids like talking about that on the schoolyard. And they're not telling tales out of school, literally.
No. It's in school, and he does do that.
But I feel like if this movie came out 20 years later and they had that moment, $1 billion movie.
Oh, well, people would have lost their shit. They'd be like, we finally get to see Kenny's face and hear his Mike Judge voice.
Maybe they're not good producers.
That's the trick.
Story motivation to 10, obviously. One of the greatest satire films ever.
Are we actually sluts for satire?
Maybe. But that just makes us pretentious douchebags.
Oh, well, we'll find out during Satiremember.
Do you want to do it?
Maybe.
All parody movies?
Only if we can do Walk Hard Again.
We keep saying we're going to do it. Are we actually going to do it?
Like,
I
my
don't
birth?
Want the blood flowing into my prenus if it doesn't need to right now. I'd rather
all
keep
I'm
it
saying,
up in the brain.
All
upstairs
I'm saying.
Brain, not downstairs. Sorry.
Can I finish? Can I finish?
Sorry, buddy.
All I'm saying is my birthday's in September, so I can make a Walk Hard happen.
Maybe stay tuned. I don't know. I could just said stay tuned. I forget that most of the time whenever I say it too.
Yeah.
Maybe was there.
Stay tuned. And then we just never talk about it ever again.
No, until we'll get there. Just with the thesaurus.
10 for story motivation. Let's talk about the protagonist.
Kids.
The kids. The boys.
They're great. 10.
I see what you're doing here. Antagonist.
Satan and Saddam and parents. It's everything that these little boys.
Sheila Broflovsky.
They have to go up against it. It's tricky. They're little and all they have is their gusto to get them through this movie.
Just these
right
tiny children trying to save the world from the apocalypse brought on by Kyle's mom, who's a big fat bitch. She's the biggest bitch in the whole wide world.
We'll get there. Well, for sure we'll get there.
Yeah.
It's obviously a 10.
I mean, can you get worse than Saddam Hussein and Satan? And a cameo from Hitler and Gandhi?
Such amazing gets. I can't believe it.
10 for antagonist. I don't even care. Let's go. Director.
It's Trey Parker. He absolutely knocks it out of the park with this thing. And even shits on his own style of animation as a joke.
Yeah.
Tears down the fourth wall right at the beginning of this movie. And we'll get there when we talk about the screenplay. But yeah, he's phenomenal.
He's amazing.
It is just more of the same, though, right?
More of the same, but, like, you figure they started planning this movie during, like, season 1 of South Park.
But it's, like, more of the same, right?
You mean, like, as in it's a 10?
Oh, it's absolutely a 10, but I'm saying it's just the show, just bigger, longer, and uncut.
Yes, but there's an extra level to it because, you know, back then you couldn't say any of these words on Comedy Central, and now you can.
But that's the most brilliant part of the opener. Let's say, we'll get the screenplay in a second. Are we there now?
No, we're on style and tone.
Oh, 10, obviously.
10 for director. Duh. 10 for style and tone.
It's more of the same. We love it.
We love it. Just, now we're talking screenplay.
It's like the show, but they could say fuck now.
Yeah, exactly.
And they make that joke right away, too, by making this a movie about profanity in movies and having the kids soak up all this language and bring it to school, and they're blown away. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You keep putting us, the audience, in the shoes of these kids, and yet we can't relate at all because it is all completely absurd, but also kind of get it.
Yeah. And I mean, we've always been big advocates of a movie knowing exactly what it is. And this movie is in the process of this happening in the press and everything as it's being released. It's a self-commentary on its own release.
This doesn't surprise me at all. Because are you familiar with how Trey Parker and Matt Stone wrote this thing with Pam Brady?
No.
In order to make this movie at Paramount, Paramount sent them to a story structure class.
Okay.
Trey Parker told this, and I don't know what's real and what's not real about anything that I'm about to say.
Unreliable narrator.
Including what this class may or may not have been. But he said there were about 20 people in there. Teacher's name was Miss Appleby.
Of course.
And he gave us the 5 or 6 kind of things that he took away from this story structure class. Take it for what it is, and then actually think about it for a second.
Okay.
And I'm going to say this stuff verbatim.
I love that. Yeah.
From the interview that he did with Comedy Central for the making of this movie, the bigger, longer, and uncut one. 1, start the movie. Have some stuff happening.
Yeah. It's a good way.
2, around 10 minutes in, some big stuff needs to happen.
Sure.
3, 30 minutes in is the first act, so you need some stuff that changes that stuff. 4, end of act 2. All this stuff that turns all that stuff on its ear.
Yeah.
5, and all of act 3 is all these things that give reason for all that stuff before that. He then goes on to say, stuff in act 2 came from the act 1 stuff, but then the act 1 stuff sort of related to the stuff in act 3. It's pretty amazing.
I don't see the lie.
And he ended it by saying, there's stuff and these things, and halfway through, you're like, wow, there's been like 45 minutes worth of stuff, and there is another 45 minutes worth of stuff.
Is that just the speech from the end of Team America?
So what I'm getting at is 10, obviously, for screenplay.
It did have stuff that led to other stuff, and then the stuff turned on its ear, and the stuff in one remind. Wow. Wow.
I don't know. He said all this stuff with his mouth because I'm reading it and it's gobbledygook.
Yeah. But the acts are so structured because it is a direct rip of a musical that when the end of act 2 happened, I paused the movie, got up, got a new drink, sat down because it was like an intermission because you had that giant number of all of the different songs coming together. Incredible.
Incredible. It is incredible. And can I tell you the thing I hate most about act breaks on Broadway whenever you go to like see an actual show?
Yeah.
Is you get the first half, but then the second half is much shorter.
Not
really a half and half thing.
No. It's like I sat here for an hour and then you're going to give me the 30-minute conclusion.
I don't need that. Just go through. Right. Carry on.
All right. We're going to let you take a break because this last half hour, some shit's going to happen.
Still a 10, right? Yeah. We're still doing that.
It's still a 10. The MPAA told Parker and Stone specifically that if the film contained 400 swears, it would automatically be NC-17. So they included 399.
Of course they did. Go right to the edge.
And for that reason alone, I'm like, yeah, that's a 10.
It's legitimately been like 25 plus years of them just edging themselves.
I don't know how they're going to wrap this up. I don't think they could.
I don't think they could.
In a way that's going to be enjoyable.
But they don't give a shit about your enjoyment.
No, they don't. They actually think they would prefer to just be canceled and leave everything dangling. Literally.
And then come back 10 years later and it's all part of an act.
Right.
It's a commentary on cancel culture, or I don't know. You Never Stay Dead. I can't figure it out. I don't know.
10 for screenplay. Now for the big category this month, music.
That's confidence.
I feel pretty safe too.
I have no clue what this thing scored though. So,
I don't either, but I mean, so far we're working on a perfect score.
We are, and we're going to keep working on a perfect score because this is also going to be a 10.
Because this movie has a perfect score.
Because Stephen fucking Sondheim said this is the best musical in the last 15 years.
Yeah, he did say those words. The music in this is absolutely phenomenal.
It's Oscar nominated. Phenomenal.
Blame Canada was nominated for the Oscars for Best Original Song, and Robin Williams performed it on stage, and it was delightful.
I've watched it like 5 or 6 times since I knew we were going to watch this.
Yep, I've watched it at least that many this week. But even Blame Canada couldn't stand up to Phil Collins and Tarzan and You'll Be in My Heart.
You ever see those sketches of how Tarzan holds on to, is it Mary Jane? Is that her name?
I think you're thinking of Spider-Man.
I'm not a Tarzan head.
I think it's just Jane.
That's boring.
Yeah. Add a Mary in there. Spice it up.
Jane Mary. Ugh. That sounds like a spice.
Oh, that sounds awful. It's a spice that I don't want to put on anything.
There's a whole running thing on the internet how Tarzan holds the vine in his butt cheeks because he's holding yes. onto Jane with two arms. It's a whole thing.
I have seen that. The songs in this movie are fantastic. Mountain Town, Uncle Fucka, It's Easy, Okay, Blame Canada, Cos Mom's a Bitch, What Would Brian Boitano Do?
That's such a wild number, and I forget it's in here every single time.
Always forget about it. And apparently, they didn't need to get Brian Boitano's permission to use his name and likeness for the song. But a few years later, Boitano did need to get and received Parker and Stone's permission to use the phrase on t-shirts that he sold for charity.
That's what Brian Boitano would do.
That is what Brian Boitano would do. He also had, I think, he had a cooking show for a while that was called What Would Brian Boitano Make?
Brian Boitano, he should be a two-trick pony. He's a one-trick pony, it seems like. It's not that great of a trick.
Are you talking about his ice skating?
He didn't win shit.
I don't know.
I've never listened to the stats that they give me in this song. For all I know, he could be the greatest of all time. And not just immortalized in a South Park, the movie song.
Apparently, he was very hesitant to go see the movie because he thought they were ripping on him. And then when he went and people were like appreciatively laughing at the joke, he was like, oh, okay. This isn't that bad.
It's not bad at all. They make you heroic. You fight grizzly bears in ice skates.
The Hell Isn't Good song is actually performed by James Hetfield.
Perfect cast.
For the longest time, I wasn't sure if it was just Trey Parker doing his, you know, manly man rock voice, or if it was proper James Hetfield, and it was.
Good for Trey Parker for fooling you all these years, then.
Yeah. 10 for music. Come on.
Has to be. Oh, no, I just realized the box office thing will happen.
Yeah, the box office is going to happen.
Oh, that just is a kick in the balls. All right.
Do you want to give it an 11 for music?
No. We don't fake anything.
No, we don't.
Except box for my office. Enjoyment of having to talk to Brian every week.
Yeah.
What would Brian Boitano? He'd fucking kill himself at some point.
Yeah, Brian Boitano. Well, there'd be too many Brians for one podcast.
That would be. Welcome to Brian and me.
I'm Brian with a Y. I'm Brian with an I, and also an Olympic skater. That's who Brian Boitano is.
It's so obscure even now.
South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut came out the weekend of June 30th, 1999, same weekend as Wild Wild West and Summer of Sam. It finished fourth in the box office behind Wild Wild West, Big Daddy, and Tarzan, which was in its third week. But it did beat out The German's Daughter, Star Wars Episode I, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, Summer of Sam, Notting Hill, and An Ideal Husband.
What a time to be alive.
The movie only cost $21 million to make and ended up grossing $83.1 million, which is a 395.9% increase, which is a 9 on the scale. But I kind of want to give it a Wild Wild West bump.
Down? Because Wild Wild West, as bad as it is, still a lot of fun.
It is, but there is a lot of implications that the only reason Wild Wild West was number one that week was because there were people underage buying tickets to that movie to sneak into South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Bump it.
That's a 1-point bump. And that's going to give it a 10 on our scale.
I should probably look up the score.
Yeah, maybe look it up after we discuss the impact on the industry.
That seems fair. I'm terrified right now because I know critics love this thing and I know fans love this thing.
Fans, so
you know,
absolutely
that you're playing with a small runway here.
We are. I think I'm hoping we kind of went a little bit over and above.
Me too, but there's probably not a lot of wiggle room.
I'm sure the critics came in a little bit under us, but we'll see. Impact on the industry. Oscar nominated.
Yeah, but a lot of movies are. Doesn't make it an impact on the industry as a whole.
That's true, but how
Crash
many...
won Best Picture.
That's fair. But how many people show up to the Oscars tripping on acid wearing dresses made famous by Jennifer Lopez and Gwyneth Paltrow?
Half the people do one thing and half the people do the other thing. You're telling me there's two individuals who did both at the same time?
I'm telling you that Trey Parker and Matt Stone showed up to the 2000 Oscar ceremony tripping on acid wearing dresses that were previously made famous in the Oscar runway by Jennifer Lopez and Gwyneth Paltrow.
It's absolutely insane.
And then they left halfway through after Robin performed to go get dinner because they were bored.
I don't know how this helps the impact on the industry. I don't know.
I think it's a commentary on the Oscars.
8? I don't know. For this movie? 8? 9? I like it, damn it.
Hey, you know what? We wouldn't get things like Sausage Party or other adult animated big pictures without this movie. So
it's true.
And maybe
that
not
still doesn't
even
make me want to bump it up, but still.
Another 20 seasons of South Park. Yeah, let's give it an 8. That's going to give South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut a total score of 98.
We're really, really high.
I figured.
Critically, this movie scored an 80%. A bit on the low side. Roger Ebert saw this thing and he gave it 2.5 stars. But the audience,
us,
the people we should relate to the most, 88%. So we're even higher than that.
We are 10 points higher than them, in fact.
This movie's amazing. It's one of my favorite musicals of all time. Of course I'm going to pick this one.
Yeah, excellent choice. Definitely was high on my list of things to pick.
And now, Brian, we finally get to the thing that I've been waiting to ask you for an entire week.
Yeah.
Because you just had a tease.
I did.
It's a little like a pickle. It's like a boogle. Not a musical.
Not a musical.
Great movie. Not a musical. Brian, why don't you beer us all the musical that we're going to be talking about next week?
Next week, we're going to be talking about a musical that knows it's a musical. And we know that because it's in the title. It's the only Trey Parker movie we haven't talked about yet.
Oh, my God.
And somehow, I don't know how I got this past you. It's Cannibal the Musical.
Wow, that came a lot sooner than I thought.
I chose that weeks ago as my pick. And I, somehow, when you picked South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, I was like, that's either perfect or it's going to be way too much Trey Parker. But now we're in it.
We've been doing this for way too long together, man.
Yeah.
We're going to start attracting bears at the same time.
Cocaine bears?
Next week. Cannibal the Musical.
Until then, thank you for listening. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe, and send us your movie suggestions for this month's listener pick. Make sure it's a musical or we're going to shame you. I mean, we'll still do your movie because those are the rules, but we will publicly shame you for choosing not a musical.
We have to. You're an adult, presumably. Yeah, I don't know. You could just be a weird person on the internet, in which case, hello, sailor.
Follow the rules.
Musicals, it's like pornography in the setting. You know it when you hear it. Come on, people.
Come on, people. Also pornography.
You know that there's going to be a musical porn out there. You know that's a thing.
Oh, no. Now you've put the idea out there. There's also cats. Don't forget there's cats. You might have to watch that instead of a musical porn. I don't know.
Oh, did you say Facebook, Brian? That we leave a post there every single recording day and then we ask the questions?
I was getting there, yeah.
Okay, so on Facebook, yeah, of course we got questions. Derek Ives said, I'd like to start campaigning my selection for this month's listener pick. Cats. And
oh, no.
I highly suggest you double down and make it a drunk episode.
Oh, no.
He goes on to say, patrons, let's make this happen. Join me and we can hear what the boys have to say about that catastrophic musical. Truly, this is a mesmerizing watch because it's so bonkers.
I regret everything I just said.
Yeah, no, you just assisted Derek Ives in doing the worst thing that someone could do. Also, the Ginger Skull Dave Novak suggested Cats.
I mean, he's kind of our cat expert.
And he's trying to think of a second movie just so he doesn't have to put Cats twice, because he knows that if Cats gets picked, as you said, he is our cat expert.
Listen, we had him on Catwoman, we had him on Garfield, we had him on Garfield, The Tale of Two Kitties.
The boy knows Cats.
So, you know, if that comes to fruition, it only makes sense.
And since we're here, still on the Facebook, before your whole spiel, Jeff Miners asks, what do you blame Canada for the most? And as you heard the Canadian minister in this movie say, they've already apologized for Bryan Adams. But yeah, this movie came up before Justin fucking Bieber, Canada.
That's true. Apologize again. Tell us what you're really sorry about.
It's so ridiculous. You can't take him seriously. Their money's called the loony.
It smells like maple syrup.
All right, now you can do your thing.
All right, yeah. Join us on Patreon this month so you too can get two picks and double down on Cats, apparently.
Or anything else. Or anything else.
Or literally any other movie, preferably a musical. Or if you don't have Facebook, like some of our listeners don't, email us your picks, because we like getting your emails too. But you can also follow us on social media, at Beer Me a Movie, on Instagram and Facebook.
That it? You got anything else?
I think that's it for me.
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening. You're all the absolute best, except for you, the fucking Canadian. I know we have him. I know we have him.
We've narrowed it down to the one.
I don't actually hate the Canadian. I'm just jealous. That's it.
Same. I love those guys.
I love these guys. Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Love them so much. We'll see them next week. Cannibal the Musical. We'll see you then.